Welcome to Member Care Media. You're listening to the third part of our series on singleness with Reverend Tim Herbert. I have to say that I'm especially looking forward to exploring the biblical understanding of singleness in our program today. Tim, please tell us what you mean by the biblical understanding of singleness.
I think it's very interesting that many churches will talk often about a biblical understanding of marriage. And most Christians will be able to pull together verses out of Genesis, out of that terrible passage of Proverbs 31 that intimidates so many women, and explain why it's good to be married. But very few people will be able to explain why it's good to be single and to understand why the New Testament seems to conflict with the Old Testament in its understanding of singleness. So it's good to be able to start working through this and to find some understanding. A lot of what I have to say is based on a book called Redeeming Singleness by Barry Danilak, D-A-N-Y-L-A-K. And he teaches really, really well on this. And he started off his book by going back to Genesis 1:28, which starts with God blessed them. So even before God said, go forth and multiply, he blessed them. And then he says, what happens to this blessing? How is this blessing passed on to another generation? And so that's why the original Israelites needed children, because they passed it on through time, through their children. We must remember that ancient Israel had very little concept of an afterlife. They didn't share our understanding of heaven. They had this place called Sheol, which was dark and shadowy and gloomy, and it looked like that you had no body in there, and you get verses like the dead cannot praise you. And so it seems to be a terrible place. They didn't live on. So ancient Israelites lived on in their descendants. This is why the genealogies in the Old Testament are so important, because they're keeping alive the ancestors in people's memories. It's the same with land, and that's why it's so important to have children to pass your land onto so that you don't lose it. And therefore, this sets up a need for children, a need for husbands and wives to be able to bring those children up and to fulfill what Judaism still sees as one of the 613 commandments in the law, go forth and multiply. So that's why marriage and children seem so important in the Old Testament, and not having children seems to be one of the worst things that can happen to you. But things start to change once you get a better understanding of the afterlife. And there's a turning point in Isaiah. And if you look at Isaiah, you're beginning to see Isaiah getting a glimpse of heaven in a way that we would recognize. And so he's beginning to sense that the children aren't necessarily the be-all and end-all of everything. And if you haven't got children, it's not a problem. So in Isaiah 54, he writes to women, don't worry if you haven't got children. You will have more children than the woman who's been married for a long time. In fact, make your tent bigger. Stretch out your tent poles. In other words, he's saying you're going to need a bigger tent because you're going to have more kids, which is a fantastic prophecy for women who are unmarried and would love to have kids but can't. He says something similar for men in Isaiah 56. And he says, those of you who can't have children, don't worry, you will have a place and a name. In Hebrew, that's Yad Vashem, which is the name they took for the Holocaust Museum in Jerusalem, for the very reason that those people who died in the Holocaust didn't have descendants to pass things on to. And so these men are offered a place, i.e. land, and a name, i.e. their family name being continued, because they've got an idea of their existence in heaven. Now, later on, when you get into the New Testament and you've got a much more developed understanding of the afterlife, we don't need to survive through the land that we own or the children that we parent, because we know we personally will survive this life and transition into the next. So that is why the New Testament appears to have so much more to say about singleness than the Old Testament. You with me so far?
Yes, I am. I'm just listening.
Barry Danilak is able to say in his conclusion, while in much of the Old Testament we find a generally negative disposition toward one who is single and unmarried, in the New Testament the view we find is much more positive. Given that the New Testament authors generally affirm Old Testament ethical principles on sexuality and family, it is curious that New Testament authors deviate from the Old Testament on this particular point. I would say it's more than curious. I would say it's phenomenal that these people are actually rejecting their understanding of the Old Testament in favor of a new understanding, because all of a sudden singleness has been affirmed and rehabilitated. And if we go back to that original commandment, go forth and multiply, that is nowhere repeated in the New Testament. But there's something rather similar. That commandment transmutes into go and make disciples. So as we said in our last podcast, it's not the family, it's not the children that are the important thing in the New Testament. It's the making disciples that's the important thing.
So Tim, how would you then explain the verse in Genesis 2:18 where it says that it is not good for man to live alone?
I think that's a really interesting verse because it's been taken to justify marriage. And I think it's really important at this stage that I do say I am not against people getting married. I love it when people get married. I think marriage is brilliant and important for the continued survival of our species as we bring up children within a stable family environment. What I'm trying to do is redress the balance and say that just because we love marriage doesn't mean singleness is abnormative. Singleness is equally blessed with marriage. So that verse has been taken, even by the person who wrote down that particular story in the Bible, as justifying marriage. But if we take a little deeper look at it, we find that God's response to realizing that it was not good for this human to be on his own is to create dogs and elephants and cows and ducks. If this was really originally about marriage, was God suggesting that he should marry one of them? It was only because Adam was so blooming fussy that he actually ended up getting a woman specially made for him. And I think this is not so much about marriage as it's about community. And I think it's very important that we recognize that this human being, who was the original pinnacle of human creation, male and female in one person, walking regularly with God, was still incomplete, still had a need that wasn't being met, even by his daily walks in the garden with God. And I think we need to recognize that sense of incompleteness that there can be for single people. God's response to it was not initially to say, I better give him a wife. It was, I think this person needs community. This person is isolated. And so my understanding of that is what I said previously, is that we get our needs met in community. And if we don't have that one special person to depend on to meet all those needs, we find others to be able to share those needs and be part of a loving, supportive community, which, of course, is exactly what Jesus did and showed us that it works. And Paul did exactly the same thing. When you read Paul's letters, the sheer number of people that he's writing about saying, oh, say hello to so-and-so, and this person who worked with me, and that person I lived with, and so-and-so who's my best friend. He's obviously got a huge community of people who are very important to him. And that's part of his support mechanism as he lives life as a single person. Obviously, Paul's a little bit problematic. He might have been married in the past, but certainly at the time when he's doing his traveling and he's writing his letters, he is functionally single.
But if I go back to this Genesis 2:18, it is indeed a challenge to think that Adam, daily walking in the garden with God himself, had a lack of community. and that God saw that and created the animals. But cannot then the fact that he got Eve draw us to the wrong conclusion that, you, with Eve, he solved all of his community and relational issues and problems and loneliness?
I think it's easy to see that, and perhaps that's the implication of coming at it with this Old Testament understanding of the need for partner and children in order to survive. But in actual fact, one human being doesn't solve all our community needs. We can see that their relationship had some challenges. If we speculate a little bit around how they went through that fall process, there's clearly some communication issues. Perhaps there's some things going on there that we can only speculate about. We've got no indication of what their relationship was like after that. But what we do see is that pretty soon the humans are developing communities. They're not content to live in isolated family groups. They build community for support and encouragement. One of the interesting things that I notice in the work that I do is that I have more married people with challenges in their relationships than I have single people challenged by their singleness. And so getting married is not the solution to all our personal identity and community problems. In fact, if those issues aren't resolved before we get married, we simply take those problems into our marriage with us. And whilst there may be a honeymoon period during which everything is rosy, somewhere down the line, those things can re-emerge because we will find that that one flawed, sinful, weak human being that we married is not able to meet all of our needs. And then we become frustrated and disappointed with them because they're not delivering. When in actual fact, those needs we should be looking to Christ for and the community of Christians around us, so that we're not dependent on that one person, and that would actually make for a healthier marriage.
Tim, listening to you, you reminded me of one of the truths that I keep forgetting. It is indeed the truth that will set us free. So when we take things apart and look, dare to look at things the real way, then all of a sudden there is so much life in it. And so there is good in marriage, there is good in singleness, and there are problems in being married, and there are problems in singleness. So thank you very much for unfolding this biblical understanding of singleness for us today. I'm sure most of us would like to hear more about that, and we will actually in our next program.
This feature is a presentation of Member Care Media. Thanks for taking the time to listen. We invite you to check out our website further. We offer audio features and resources to help you in your work and daily life. In addition, we have links to other helpful websites that will be an encouragement to you and your family. This is a copyright production of Member Care Media and may not be reproduced without prior written consent.